There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right. Welcome to FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday. So much in the news to talk about, and we are packing it in here in a two-hour show. We'll be looking, obviously, at the issue with the coronavirus crisis from a national level, international level, and as most important to us, right back here at home in Alabama. And it's great as we have this conversation, same one we've been having for the last couple days, heck, probably last week around here, about this two-part issue with coronavirus, one being a health issue, being one based in fighting this virus, the other one trying to cure the economy as well as we're trying to cure the virus. And it's great to have it just worked out. We already had it scheduled, and former senator, former attorney general Jeff Sessions in studio with me this hour to talk more about it. What a day to be in here.
It was a remarkable time, that's for sure. We've got a lot of important things happening. The American people are rightly, I think, showing great discipline. You ride through Mobile, as I've done today several times, and restaurants are closed. Not many people out. They're sheltering at home whenever they can. I don't think we have to starve ourselves. I mean, you can go out and get food and all, but you need to be careful. And I think people are doing that. I think it's going to help us. One of the worst things that could happen is that if nobody reacted and we continued business as usual and the hospitals got overrun, nurses started getting sick, doctors start getting sick, you don't have room in the hospitals, you don't have enough
ventilators.
All of those things, and that would be a difference. I think the president's being very clear about it. He knows how to send a message. He's out there every single day answering questions and standing with the experts and making them, when they have to stand there before the world, for the President of the United States, they know they better get prepared before they go to that meeting.
Right.
And then when they say something, it's got to be accurate or it'll come back to haunt them and they'll regret that day for sure. So it drives accuracy and truthfulness. Maybe even, I think, Congress, one thing they could do is have good hearings. Oftentimes, they just show things to advance political agendas, but calling the best experts in the country and maybe in the world and actually getting them to discuss so the American people could hear the real issues at stake and where the risks are and what our prospects are. I think one reason experts don't like to talk is because they don't know.
Right.
Nobody knows for sure, but forcing people to start giving us more information about what might happen would be helpful to us.
That would be a trend, I think, to be appreciated by the American people. I think about what I do to find guests and book people for this show. I can only imagine if the booking agency is the Senate of the United States of America, you probably get the top shelf guest on that and call for those people. It would be good because people have so many questions now. And in a world of social media, this rumor pops up, this other one pops up contrary to that, back and forth. What are folks supposed to think? I think they're probably scared from a health issue for those people that would be immunodeficient or older folks in that. And they're scared for their jobs, Senator. They're scared for their businesses. They're scared for how they're going to pay the mortgage next month.
All you got to do is ride through this town, and you see people not there, not working. Now, a lot are working at home.
Right.
They're being able to do that, so that's good. But a lot of people, I think, like your fast food people and your restaurants and other businesses, you can't do that at home. You're either working or you're not. And so this is an order from the government, basically, mm-hmm. that you cannot do these things. And therefore, I think it raises a justification for compensation. And how you get that done, I've seen that before in recessions mm-hmm. and other arguments over how to deal with that. It's not as easy as you think to fairly help people who sure. are in financial trouble and not let some cheat and get money they weren't entitled to and bust the budget more than you have to. So it's a real matter.
So kind of the intricacies of that with your experience in the Senate, number one, just watching in the past, what mechanism would you say is the right way to get the check? Does it come through the IRS? Does it come through? How do we issue the checks? How do we decide? What's your take on that?
Well, it's not easy. It's really not easy. People have wrestled with this several different times during financial crises and that sort of thing. One of the old Keynesian arguments were you just fly over the city with a helicopter and let $1,000 bills out.
Right.
It used to be $10 bills.
Right. So inflation is
But that's no good, obviously. I saw Lindsey Graham today suggest you could put it on your, you could increase everybody's unemployment insurance, which is now $300-$400 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You could increase that to something close to their current expected wage. And the federal government could fund that. But then what about a small business? People run a business. They don't unemployed. They're just out of business.
Right.
And so that is a problem. One suggestion is you don't withhold off your Social Security anymore.
Okay.
That everybody would get the full, their Social Security payments on that paycheck, but if you're not working, that doesn't help you. So actually getting money out to real people who are in need, that's what the president's working on. He's talking about $1 trillion. By the way, we spend in this country $4.7 trillion, I believe, is what we're talking about. We have $1 trillion in deficit now, and you're talking about another trillion. So you're talking about spending $5.7 trillion and borrowing $2 trillion because everything in this emergency package is borrowed because we're already in debt.
It's just
that simple.
Yes.
It's just that simple. We're in debt, so we need to spend another $1 trillion, and it's all borrowed. And so we can't lose sight of some discipline here.
Right.
But I think there's going to be a bipartisan agreement. Nobody's willing to fight too much about the details, but I do think it's wise that people who are focused, they need to focus as every way possible to make sure the money goes to where it's needed mm-hmm. and not where it's not needed.
I wonder if that gets done in the sausage making, in the process of this, because I know it needs to be expedited. But that would be my fear, that there would be things in there that would be wasteful that we'd be dealing with down the road. But if you opposed it, if you're in the House or you're in the Senate and you oppose it, well, it's easy to be lampooned. He or she is against the American people, right? That they were questioned this. They must not care about the American people. So it scares me the number of things that could be put in there that would be not touched or not questioned.
Well, it oftentimes comes down to who's got good judgment, who's what kind of personal integrity and try to make sure the thing goes right, the money gets out to the right people. So I don't think there's any doubt this is not easy. If anybody, just imagine how you're going to try to get money out to people in need and what government ways could be utilized. It's not easy, and these are huge amounts of money, and we certainly don't need to waste any.
Absolutely. As this gets added to, like you said, the big deficit we already carry. But, of course, somebody would tell us that, well, if we don't do this now, it's going to be even worse.
It would. I mean, I think that a real legitimate justification can be made that this is really unusual. This is really a crisis. And we cannot be too – we've got to protect against the a collapse in the economy also.
And because it's not every day I have you in here to talk about this, in your experience over the years, is that a real possibility?
I think there's a danger out there, yes. We would come out of it. I don't have any doubt about that. But the pain and the damage could be far greater than necessary. So that's what the experts are saying. I was ranking Republican on the Budget Committee for a while. And I will say that in these environments, if you raise too many questions, you become a bad guy.
That's what I'm wondered about, right?
It takes some courage. And there's some people that are going to ask questions, I'm sure, and try to make sure the money is actually directed effectively. But the perfect is the enemy of the good. I think Mitch McConnell said that. You just no way to get this thing done perfectly without having major delays.
All right, coming right back, more with Senator Jeff Sessions. Talk about what's going on today. And, of course, we have a postponed July 14th date for the runoff election. I want to talk about that with the senator as well. Take your text at 343-0106. And also, we'll be talking about in today's show this drug, this hydroxychloroquine that's being discussed. Could this be what we've been waiting for here to get people well that have coronavirus? That's all on the way. Stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Our guest this hour, Senator Jeff Sessions, and running here in the primary, of course, runoff that we'll talk about in just a second that's been moved to July 14th. But a real treat to have you in here and talk about your perspective on what's going on right now. I always worry about being cliched when I say, I almost ban people saying unprecedented on this show because I'm like, it gets used so much. But maybe I'll dally in that today, that what we're dealing with here to me seems unprecedented.
Well, it is, but there's no doubt, Sean, that they that the people have predicted we could have these kind of pandemics for years.
True.
Doctors and medicine. The government has said it's worked to be prepared for these events. And some of the things I'm sure that were done are beneficial right now. But the problem is that we probably have not done enough. And hopefully after this, we'll really go into this in a lot more detail. We'll develop more protocols for handling it. We'll learn more about how to contain travel and connections and control the spread. That is just we can do better. We can always do better. But right now, we're acting decisively. People, if they stay home, will not be subject to the disease.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things that we know we can do and make things better. I think most Americans are doing that. Those who are not are irresponsible. To me, that if you act irresponsibly and you contract the disease and you give it to a bunch of people, then you've got a high moral accountability for that. So all of us need to act responsibly.
Hey, there's this, I think it's because people, at least here at home, have not seen many cases here at home that they know of, or know of somebody who has had it, or somebody, God forbid, who has died of it, that it makes it hard. I get what you're saying about the morality of it. The same way it's your service to your country, you know, which is very small compared to those who have given their lives for this country. So it's very small. But then there's a part of folks that say it's so blown out of proportion. And there, that's a genuine gut opinion from people. Also, it's an opinion people who can't go to work and make money. They say this is something that is overblown, and it's costing me money. It's costing me a job. It's cost me, you know, that opinion exists out there too. And I don't feel those people are at this point. They're not doing it immorally. They say, I don't think they say, hey, I don't care if somebody gets sick. I don't care if somebody's grandparent dies because of this. They're saying, I don't believe the hype.
Yeah. Well, you stated it well. It's a tough thing, and it's a dicey, tough balance to strike for most people who can curtail their outreach and touching people and being out in public. That's probably good, because I don't think it's going to last forever.
Right.
We need to avoid a crush at the hospital.
That's a real thing.
That's a very real risk to me. We learn a lot of things, like China's making our medicines. They even threatened to withhold our medicines. I mean, there's no reason in the world they should be making our medicines. It can't be on these pills. All the cost goes into manufacturing or testing and the viability of it and the side effects and all of that human testing. Once that's settled, the pill itself is not very expensive normally, and the chemicals are not that expensive. So they could be made in the United States. Mm-hmm. So we need to learn something here. We do not become dependent on China for key medicines. It is not going to make them that much more expensive to make them in the United States than China, probably less than a penny a pill. So this is we got to make decisions about protecting American interests. Sean, we have borders. We are a nation. Nations have to defend themselves. This globalist agenda that there's no tariffs, there's international trade, we can't push back against people who cheat us on their manufacturing and the balance of trade, that is wrong. We are a nation, and our leaders, the senators, presidents, need to protect the people of this country first. And that's how President Trump got elected. That's one of the things I love so much about him. He said, we're going to defend America's interest. I don't blame the Chinese for defending their interest, but we're going to defend our interest if I'm president.
Right.
And he's been doing so. So that's exactly where we needed to be. And I do think why we should go beyond pills. We should go, what other technologies and equipment do we not want to be dependent on China for because mm-hmm. it has a national security impact? I'll tell you one of them that I was active in as Attorney General of the United States, and that is the 5G internet connection, mm-hmm. this high-speed internet connection. The leading company is Huawei out of China. It's basically a Chinese company. They absolutely cannot supply our 5G. The American intelligence community, the Defense Department, they're just apoplectic about it. Cannot happen. President Trump is saying it's not going to happen. But the UK, they're saying they're going to use Huawei. Well, they're one of our top partners on intel communication. Australia said, no, Huawei's not doing our systems. So anyway, those are things. There are other things besides just 5G and pills
right.
that are strategic of importance. And we do not, as a matter of national integrity and national security, China should not be supplying it.
You just lay out a scenario that is kind of almost a techniques of war scenario. If China wanted to, with controlling the supply of medicine. And by the way, we're not talking about designer medicines, insulin. We're talking about basic medicines, right, that they have a stranglehold on because we let ourselves get there. But if they said, we're not supplying you with whatever it is, whatever kind of medicine it is we need, and by the way, we don't know what happened, but the internet shut down. Think about right now how many people are using the internet to telecommute, to do all these things, to be able to work right now, and they could shut that down as well. That would be a pretty heavy blow, warlike blow, without ever rolling one tank anywhere or bringing a destroyer near our shores.
Well, you know, I served on the National Security Council as Attorney General, and you do talk about those things. Probably not enough, but you're aware of them. And you have to imagine a scenario in which things got really tense between us and China. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, they closed the Panama Canal. They stopped providing materials needed for batteries or whatever, and the United States is in a very weakened position economically. So we need to minimize that. Look, we don't want to end trade. We don't want to stop dealing with China. What you have to know about China is this. They are a communist government. Communist governments are atheistic, and they're hostile to that. Communist governments have no problem with lying to advance their regime and the countries, the communist regime. So they're not normal.
Yeah.
And when you deal with them, you can cut a deal with a communist country, and you can create a peaceful relationship. But if you don't defend yourself, they'll take advantage of you. That's just what they do. That's just what they do, and we have sat here with the globalist way too dominant on theories of trade and immigration that are not based on reality, that has put our country in a weakened position. And the great thing, and that's why I was so supportive of President Trump. He said, this is ridiculous. Who's defending our people? Mm-hmm. Who's defending American workers? We're closing factories so they can hire workers in China.
Right.
This is not, it's got to stop. And also, it's not free market. They cheat.
Yep.
Oh, this is all just free market. No. We've lost all kinds of factories, all kinds of businesses, laid off hundreds of thousands, millions of American workers because they've cheated to gain this advantage, and we've not done anything about it. So this negotiations between President Trump and China is of historic importance. He cannot fail. And I like it that he stands up and says this is a China virus. He's sending them a message that this country, you're not buffaloing us anymore. Right. I understand you, big boy, and we're not backing down, and you're going to cut either a good trade deal or no trade deal.
Well, yeah, people took in the media, which not surprised, had some big offense that President Trump called it the Chinese virus or the Wuhan Chinese virus. Wherever you are politically, that's just factual. That's where it came from. I mean,
yeah,
that's truth.
Look, it's these globalists. These I call them religious free traders.
Okay,
it's a religion to them. They don't believe in reality. They just believe in theory.
Right.
This is stupid, and that's been fighting them for years. Yeah, that's what I said as we debated the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which was like the European Union. The last thing the United States should ever have done was enter into a European Union-like trade agreement with these Pacific nations. So I just feel like that we're on the right track here, and if we learn from this, we may be able to protect the national security in a lot of different ways that we shouldn't just keep it at medicines. We need to examine the danger of being subjected to too much influence from China.
Let's look at another, and we just got a minute here before the news break that we'll come back, but another vital thing to our country is oil, like it is everywhere. And we're looking at, I was dumbfounded yesterday at the close. I think it was down officially 22, and after hours trading, it went down to, I think I saw 19-something dollars a barrel, $18, $19 a barrel for crude. That is, well, it's great for we the people when we go fill up. That's a risk to American producers of oil.
Well, it is. They are they're a tough bunch. They rise and fall, and they get wealthy, you know, they get rich, and then they want us to whine over them if they get free market reduces.
Right. Well,
look, the president has done this. He's done several things, and we should celebrate it. The price of gasoline in our pumps now is under $2 all mm-hmm. over. This is a dramatic thing. A guy told me he took a picture of the gas at $1.99, the first time he'd seen it below $2 in years. And then I asked him how much he spent a month. He said $50 a month on gasoline in his truck to go to work. And so calculate it.
Yep.
$50 a month at $2. What is it at $4? $100 a month. Out of his pocket. So
yeah, we all just
producing
got a little
bit more energy here, letting the free market work has resulted in lower price gas for millions of people. It's like a great tax cut, like a payment from the government almost in their pocket every month. I'll let the oil companies worry about their future.
We'll talk about this more when we get back right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Online at fmtalk1065.com. Guest in studio, Senator Jeff Sessions. Of course, I want to talk some, I guess it's all politics, but we're talking about government outside of politics for a second, but it all works its way in. I by the way, y'all are getting both Jeff Sessions and my attention here with those pictures of gas prices. That $1.59 that was sent to us, that was from Marlow. Someone over in Marlow sent that. So
that's fabulous. That's look, the president rejected extreme environmentalism that would have stopped fracking. He's rejected ending offshore production. And when you have more production, over time, the price will fall. If you have less production, as the Democrats and the liberals have favored, the price will go up. They want the price of energy to go up. They're indifferent to what it means to a mama who's trying to raise a family, and she's paying $200 a month instead of $400 a month for gasoline. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is no little matter. This is after-tax money when you do that. So I think that that's an unappreciated factor in the strength of the economy that we had before this virus.
Maybe it'll help us pull out of where we are now. Maybe it's one of those things that can, you know, get things turned around quickly. I want to talk about a couple things. Number one, get the announcement here. It was, I know that I had Secretary of State John Marshall on the show, I guess, on Monday, and he had asked about postponing.
John Merrill.
Oh, John Merrill, not John Marshall. I'm combining Steve Marshall and John Merrill into one. Yes, so John Merrill was on the show with us, and we're talking about his request to have the postponed date for the runoff, and then waiting for the Attorney General Steve Marshall's opinion. It comes back, says the governor can do it, so we've now postponed till July 14th. Last time you were in here, I said, my gosh, you got a even tighter than normal schedule in a runoff. It used to be 6 weeks in Alabama. You were dealing in this one with 4 weeks. Now you've got a little bit more time. What does this mean to your campaign?
Well, it changes a lot. Okay. Several things have changed a lot. One of them is you can't have meetings. Like we had a meeting a couple of days ago in Chambers County, a good group of people. They decided, you know, it's more than 10 people. We just can't do it. So we ended up doing a telephone conference call and had a lot of questions. It's not quite the same as sitting and looking, you know, in that town and meeting people, but it will suffice. We did that at Atmore. We had a conference call in lieu of a meeting in Atmore. So using technology like really talk radio.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you communicating with people?
Right.
It's frustrating today how to do it. So this is a venue that I've always admired and believed in, and it's even more critical today, don't you think?
Very much so. And it's that's our job. People are asking, are y'all going to quarantine or whatever? No, we're not going to go. This is always when we work. We'll never let y'all down.
We're 6 feet apart.
Yeah, we are 6 feet apart in here, and we do like we and I talked about. I mean, we're doing the Clorox cleansing and all those things. We're still coming to work, because we're lucky enough to have a job here where we can do this and still be, you know, and I worry about the people that don't get to go to a job site or don't get to, you know, work that shift at the restaurant or something, you know, and so I'm going to do my part here to, you know, talk about their situation. No reason for us to stay home, but I'm thinking about campaigning. You know, it's almost like can't shake hands and kiss babies with this. You get more time to campaign, but that thing, talk radio is great, and this venue is great because it is a lot more intimate than television. It's a lot more real. You know, you have a longer conversation. But there's something about going and sitting down with those people in Chambers County or going to a factory or the things you do when you're campaigning. It's going to be a weird time where you can't do that.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, every year, I think except the last year in the Senate, I went to every county every year. And you can't help but learn something in that process, even if you're pretty dumb. And I think we really developed friendships and understood the economy and the special needs of every area of the state. And, of course, growing up here, or at least being here for almost my entire professional life, 40 years plus, you get to know this area. So those things are valuable.
Well, you have an advantage. I'll just say what you won't say. You have an advantage because you've done that for years and you know the people and you have the personal contacts. You know, maybe in this situation right now with coronavirus, you can't go rekindle that and go shake that hand again. You can only do it virtually, but you've made those contacts over the years. So that's obviously, in my opinion, a distinct advantage you have. This time frame, I don't know, you know, we've talked about this time frame. It was so compressed before. Now it's extended through July 14th for the runoff. What about debates? What about what would you do in that situation? I guess at some point, hopefully before July 14th, that the quarantine will be off and we could have people all show up at a venue and watch this. But what are you hearing? Are you going to get to debate?
Well, we've challenged our opponent to a debate. Tommy Tuberville's rejected it. Several different ideas have been floated, various TV networks. One idea was conservative talk show people said they would host it and do mm-hmm. it by on radio. So there were various different ways, but this man needs to say where he stands. For example, on China, not too many months ago, he said he didn't agree with the president's policy on China. He said he opposed tariffs. Well, the president's used tariffs to bring China to the table before mm-hmm. we had this virus problem. He's used tariffs to bring Mexico and Canada so we could get rid of NAFTA mm-hmm. and create a new trade agreement that works better for us. He also said he's 100% free trader. Well, this is what I call and have for years referred to as religious free traders. No tariffs, 100% of free trade. That's the globalist position. That is the globalist position. President Trump's position was we're going to defend America's interest, and we're not going to be cheated on the world stage anymore. We're not going to lose a single American job as a result of unfair trading practices, and I'll be prepared to use the only tool I have, tariffs. Mm-hmm. Going to drop bombs on them? I mean, what else do you do to bring a country right. To heal and enforce them? They need our markets more than we need them. We can buy products from all kind of countries and maybe even make it here. Wouldn't that be good? But if we're going to stand up to them, you've got to be able to use the tariff and say, you don't get to sell in our market at this unless you play fair.
What do you tell folks, and this is a tough question, but what do you tell folks that come out and say, I've listened to everything, I get it, I know that you're the person behind the ideas that the candidate, Donald J. Trump, ran on. That's me saying it. That's not you saying it. You can agree or disagree. But now you have President Trump endorsing Tommy Tuberville. And why is he doing that? What do you tell voters in Alabama? Say, I want to come vote for you, but I'm getting a confused message here.
Well, look, I just got to say, I love President Trump. I mean, this guy is just unusual. Mm-hmm. And he has strengths, and he's drive and ability to get things done. And he was frustrated with me over what I felt I had to do and recuse myself from an investigation that even were investigating me.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of his campaign. I had an official role in his campaign.
Right.
The reason I didn't go to every county every year in 2016 was because I traveled to virtually every state in the country for Donald Trump. That's
right.
Why I wasn't in Alabama. But I thought I made a decision that his election was that important. And I didn't just vote for him. I mean, I was
there. You're the first to endorse. Yes.
I would just correct a little bit. I was advancing and come to break ranks with the establishment. Somebody said you're an establishment candidate. That offends me. Anybody that knows what's happened in the United States Congress and observed it knows that I was the independent voice.
Correct.
I stood up against Republican establishments, Democrat establishments, Wall Street establishments, the big liberal media establishment.
Mm-hmm.
They said bad things about me, but I never backed down.
Right.
Yelling at an umpire isn't necessarily strength.
Right.
Standing in a gym talking about weightlifting is not strength. I stood alone for Donald Trump. I stood alone against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, and we won. But get back to Donald Trump. I was advancing what I thought were common sense Alabama values mm-hmm. and what I believed on trade and on immigration, on taxes, defending religious freedom, great federal judges. What I learned was that President Trump believed that, too.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't just get it from me. That's what he believed.
Y'all worked together.
And that's why he hadn't waffled on it.
Yeah.
It's not he's following Jeff Sessions, as some of my friends, I think that overstates it. But we had a harmonious.
So it's just me that says that, y'all. It's not actually Senator Sessions, yes.
Well, I think he's learned from me that the American people agreed with me. And
there
he thought,
a lot of people
I think maybe I can get elected, too. Because
you were hearing their voices.
Think.
I'll say this. You were hearing their voice when other people weren't in Congress. You were hearing the voice of those folks that showed up, in record numbers, this group that bucked every poll that said there was no way this thing was, in the tank. Hillary Clinton could have just barely walked in there and won the whole thing easily. Every poll said there's no way this guy wins. You were hearing those voices from the American people that showed up that day, you'd been hearing them for a long time. I know our conversations over the years.
I was hearing it, and it also I thought they were right.
Correct, yeah. You said
President Trump said to the American people, you're right, we need to end illegal immigration. You're right, they're cheating us on trade. It's not going to happen anymore. And the American people were right. Yeah. And Washington and the liberal establishment was wrong. So I feel that that was what it was all about. I would ask the voters, if what about Trump endorsing my opponent? I would say, honestly, the ICE officers, immigration officers, just endorsed me. They said I was the number one advocate for ICE officers and their mission in the entire Congress, 535 members,
wow.
Which is true. I was.
Yep.
And who is going to be the most effective advocate to help President Trump get the wall completed and close the loopholes and as Attorney General, I was involved in the legal cases. We just won my case on appeal over sanctuary cities, denying them money. The lower court said you can't deny them that money. I said you could. And Bill Barr contingent to legislation just won in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. So I've been in those wars deep, and I'm confident I can do better. I'm confident I understand China and trade better than my opponent. Not only understand it better, he's wrong on a lot of things he said about immigration. That we just need all these workers. All we need to know is who they are. That's not an immigration policy. That's the liberals' immigration policy. That's not President Trump's policy. So now he said, I'm for the wall and everything's forgotten. But these words that he said are like no tariffs, evidence to me that he's more in the establishment range than I, and are just not good policy for the country right now. We're going to win this thing. We're going to win this re-election. We're going to fix the border, I believe, but it's going to be a narrow window, and if it doesn't get done, we may never get it done because there are powerful business forces and there are powerful left-wing forces that do not want it fixed, I can tell you.
That's for sure.
I smell the sulfur on their breaths. I've been there in those fights.
Texture here. Bill says on the text line, when choosing a senator, should previous experience in that field be a factor?
Well, I'll just say it this way. If you evaluate a senator's performance and they're not working, they've gotten lazy, they've gotten in bed with special interests and don't listen to the people anymore, you do not want them. That experience is no good. But if you've got a senator that broke ranks with almost the entire Congress on occasion, stood up for your values, and was effective in it, won big historic battles, even against great odds like we did on immigration three times, and it seemed like everybody was on the other side, and we won because we energized the American people. They called in, they sent bricks one time,
yes.
To build a wall, and all of a sudden the movement that was on the verge of victory just collapsed. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in Congress, but I was the number one guy that blowing the whistle on
yep.
it. And so I'm something I'm proud of. And now we have a chance to end illegal immigration, keep legal immigration. We're not against immigrants, but we just need to serve the national interest.
As we go to the news break here, Zach from the text line says, Jeff needs the seat back. He was a great representative for the state of Alabama during the steel dumping that was killing our scrap and steel mill workers. He worked his butt off in the Senate, and I won't forget it. So there's a...
I did fight. I remember talking to George Bush about steel. They were dumping steel in
days?
Here.
Yeah.
And I looked at President Bush and I said, Mr. President, I know you believe in trade, but we're not patsies. It's time to end that. And he nodded his head. And the next day, I think he issued the first tariffs on steel that we'd seen in decades, maybe, in Washington. But he was a big free trader. But he knew we were getting cheated. And I was active in that fight.
There's Zach. Zach didn't forget it. All right, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. Stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. We'll be right back.
3, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, continuing our conversation with Jeff Sessions, and a lot of text coming in here as well. And a lot of this is some of the stuff we dealt with earlier in the show, but I will circle back to it. And that is, from your perspective, your time in the Senate, the response right now that's coming out of the legislative branch. So not President Trump's doing his part, but out of the legislative branch. Do you like what they're doing? Would you tweak it? What's your take on this?
Well, what happens is the leadership and their team and some of the committee chairmen and their team review all these proposals and they make recommendations, and it's hard to stand up to them. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's hard to have as much information as they have. And they've always got reasons for why they do what they do. But I do think it's helpful sometimes to... for senators who've been there a while to actually question, having seen some of the sleight of hand things that occur.
I'm not imagining it, right? It has
happened. No, it occurs. They put in, you know, they maybe buy off some senator. There's some, I say buy off, they promise them something they want for their state. Or
there's some kickback.
And you do those things, and it's not always good for the country. So I definitely think that you've got, in a situation like this, I don't deny it'd be a tough time to try to strike the right balance of getting something done, having a bipartisan bill, and at the same time not waste money.
Yes.
We don't have money to waste. This country is already in debt. I hate to say the bad news, but every dollar in this $1 trillion package is going to be borrowed because we're already in debt. So if you spend more money than you are spending today, you have to borrow every penny of it. And that reality is out there. It is a grim reality. Things have not collapsed as bad as some of the predictions were a few years ago, that we were going to, you know, we'd have a recession or inflation mm-hmm. running through the roof. Nobody knows for sure why. I think it, every day you have a massive increase in the deficits and the total debt, then you are creating more risk for our children.
We've got the two parts of this discussion, the health side of it and the coronavirus and its effect on the economy. And I want to get your take on that before we wrap up for today. Because the fundamentals of the economy, I don't believe, have changed. Now, changed short term because people are quarantined and not out shopping and spending, the American consumer. But this is driven by a virus. It's not driven by subprime loans. It's not driven by... That hasn't changed. So it seems like, this may be Pollyanna of me, the virus gets contained, we get over this, the economy that was humming along is still sitting there ready to go, or not?
I want to believe that too, and I think that may be true. That's certainly what I hope. We've gone through difficulties before. Maybe it's a little more like 9/11, mm-hmm. When the whole economy seemed to shut down for a while, when everything, you know, we didn't have systemic problems.
Right, there was no fundamental economic reason for that recession, right?
You're right about that. So I think that's, and I believe it will happen. I believe that people are going to take care. I believe that we're going to have, it's going to get worse before it gets better. But it would really be bad if we had a colossal overflow of our hospitals. Mm-hmm. Our nurses are getting sick, the personnel, the doctors getting sick, the monumental stress that would bring about. But it does end. People get an immunity, and then the spread slows down naturally. So I believe we're in good shape. I would just say one more thing, Sean. I love this area. We've been here over 40 years. Our children went to school here. And I know this area. So we've got some important things. It was just so great to see Austell and 4,000 employees. And that program is dependent on Navy shipbuilding. It's out of my Armed Services Committee, and I expect to go back on that committee. I'll have my first choice, the senior member of the class, and get on Armed Services Committee.
That's where
we got to keep that going because, I mean, they don't have a lot of commercial stuff.
Right.
So this is it. And then Airbus is just continuing to do fabulously well and helping nurture them and make sure they're not mistreated by mm-hmm. some forces in the Senate that would another plane's side.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things that I care about, the industrial development, Batesville, the Port of Mobile, Alabama State Docks, that kind of thing is all important too. I care about these national issues. You can count on me. People know where I stand. There's no doubt about it. I'm not weak. I'm strong on these issues. And also, you have to be able to protect your state's interests too. Make sure that we're not taking advantage of, and make sure that we're able to maybe expand some of the federal programs in Alabama. I just would share that thought. It's important too.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right, Jeff Sessions, our guest, for coming back. Hour number two, and we'll join some of the conversation from earlier today. A new drug name that may be one of the big parts of the fight against coronavirus.